Hotel Mom. I'm Diana Kelly, and I've been momming for several decades, including tending my fur babies, kids I gave birth to, kids I mentored as a broadcaster and college instructor, my kids' friends, and my friends. I'm not a psychologist or doctor, but I do know how to dig up advice from those who are, and that's what I'll share with you. If you have something to share with me, remark, comment, question, please comment below. We're closing in on Memorial Day, which many of us connect with cookouts and parades and memorial wreaths for those who made the greatest sacrifice for our freedom in the armed forces. My dad always grilled up a feast, and Mom made her world-famous potato salad, and then we'd hit the lake or a friend's pool and go swimming. In my family growing up, Memorial Day was always a big deal. There was a parade in the center of my hometown. Dad would always have us salute the troops marching by, usually reserves. My dad served in the Navy, my grandfather in the Army, and my brother in the Air Force, and his son in the Air Force Reserve. Now, my kid's dad was an Army National Guard vet. We always made our kids pay respects to the troops when we saw them at an event. It wasn't hard to remind them of how much our troops put themselves at risk after growing up in the shade of 9/11. When they were young, they saw TV clips of planes crashing into skyscrapers. My then 5-year-old came home with a picture he'd drawn of one of those planes, with a comment from his teacher gently suggesting he see a little less television that week. We stopped watching TV for a week after that, and then we hopped back on watching the Disney Channel and Nickelodeon. Their father and I realized how saturated our children were becoming with the replay of the horror of that day. Nearly a decade later, many Americans were glued to the television the night reports were out that the mastermind of the 9/11 attacks was actually dead. There was much rejoicing when it was confirmed, along with some trepidation. As I drove my then 13-year-old to school on Monday, I explained to her about the announcement of Osama bin Laden's death. I figured she'd be inundated with that news in class. I also asked her to say a prayer for her cousin, who was stationed in a dangerous location overseas. Already there were reports of the American government preparing for retaliatory attacks, and my godson was in a prime location. So apparently was my neighbor, who I drove to school every morning. She was in the JROTC program at her high school, and they no longer drilled outside or wore their uniforms. They'd been warned that the Taliban was targeting them. Of course they would be. Why would you target the folks who are actually trained to fight you when you can pick on those with the least amount of training to make your point? Bullies always pick on those weaker than themselves. So do cowards. And then they try to incite fear. My daughter's reaction to the potential danger to her cousin was to get choked up. She wiped the tears from her eyes eventually as she said, "I didn't realize he was there." I confirmed he was and told her we had to pray and believe he'd be okay. Our government would be looking out for him. She swallowed back her tears, nodded firmly, and glanced over at me. "Can we make some cookies for him?" That's the American spirit starting at an early age. MilitaryFamilyLife.com suggests you talk to your kids about ways to honor the vets. Read the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. Talk about why the writers decided to write what they did. Let your children pretend they're starting their own country and create their own framework of rights and responsibilities. To be patriotic, kids must know as much as they can about their country, according to informedfamilies.org. In general, patriotism is defined as a love for or devotion to one's country. It's often mistaken for nationalism or the feeling that one's nation is superior to all others. But patriotism really is a feeling of pride in what the country stands for, what it's accomplished, and what it's still hoping to do, both for its citizens and for the rest of the world. It can also mean defending your country and its ideals from external, physical threats. It's always a gamble when you show kids something tough, something disturbing, but something you think they need to know. It's a little easier to do it at an age where they understand the difference between defending yourself and picking on someone. Up next, I'll be joined by my friend and colleague at Ball State, Sherry Walls, who's also a mom. Let's talk American spirit right now with my friend and colleague, Sherry Walls. As college professors, we always look forward to holiday weekends, and we've got a big one coming up with Memorial Day, but we also have a time to salute the vets with this. So was patriotism ever something that you talked about, Sherry, with your kids? I mean, other than let's go to the Memorial Day parade or something like that.
Probably not. I mean, certainly 4th of July is one of my favorite holidays. I wouldn't say it's necessarily because of patriotism. It's more about the fireworks.
Yes.
Yeah. But,
the cob, hot dogs, the whole nine yards. Yeah.
But we did have on our little street in our little town a family who has veterans, their veteran family, and they do a Memorial Day parade every year. And that was probably one of the first times my kids ever asked me, why are they doing that parade? And why are we watching it? And, you know, it wasn't really a parade. It's just down our block, you know.
Right.
But they would all get on their little ATVs and we would all wave flags and we'd all say hello. And it was really cute. But that was probably the first time that my kids ever asked about what patriotism is.
Yeah. Now, see, my kids' dad was a vet. Both of their grandfathers were vets. And their great-grandfathers were vets as well. So, I mean, it was just one of those things. And they had cousins that became vets. And there was, after 9/11, I mean, it just seemed like patriotism kind of amped up during that time period. And it wasn't so much a question for them. They understood, you salute because people protected us. But they kind of took it like your fire department, your police department were among those protecting, you know, so they regarded that as patriotism as well. And for the longest time, Austin wanted to be a fireman. I mean, every time we'd see fire departments put something on display, he was there, you know, he'd be there, he'd get one of their plastic helmets, you know, and all that. So I thought he was going to wind up doing that, but he didn't. But he always had respect for them. And so did my daughter, too. She didn't really want to be a firefighter, but yeah. But that was one of those things that she would salute when they'd be in a parade or something like that. And we had a fire engine hanging on her Christmas tree. I mean, we were that geeked out about that. But my brother had served in the Air Force. And his son also went Air Force for a while. You know, he only did like one tour.
Right.
So it was kind of passed on in the family that way. But Brian was in the Air Force for a long time until they got to the point where they wanted him to go to fly a desk instead of an airplane because he was really, really good at managing people. And they needed somebody like that. And they were sending 18-year-olds up in the F-16s. And he was like, you know what? That's what I really love doing is flying. So he went and salutes another airline now.
Yeah.
So, and has been for years.
No, we didn't have anybody in the military. Nobody in my family served. So we'd never had that exposure, except now they're cousins. So my nephew is a reservist, and then his wife is active duty Navy. So they're both in the Navy. And that's probably been the closest that my kids have had exposure to a military type of family, you know, type of thing.
Mm-hmm. It can be kind of scary, though, when you're explaining to kids the concept of war and the concept of the need for defending your country, because you try to protect them. You don't want them to think about scary things, especially as you're tucking them in. But during the day, my kids would see, especially during 9/11, after the aftermath of 9/11, they kept playing all of those clips of planes flying into buildings and all that. And my son actually wound up getting reported in a nice way by his first grade teacher, who was very concerned because all of his artwork seemed to focus on that. And I thought, yeah, you know. And not too long after that, there was a Spider-Man movie that came out with a Green Goblin dropping bombs on things. And all of that footage had made an impact on him to the point where she's like, you really need to dial down that exposure at home. And his dad and I agreed. We're like, yeah, this is probably not a good thing for kids to be exposed to relentlessly.
Yes. Oh, I remember that time after 9/11. Just, it was all over the news. My daughter was just one when it happened, and so she wasn't exposed to any of it. And then, of course, it died down after a while, and it wasn't on the news all the time.
Right.
And I remember we went to our church at the time, and it was, must have been the 10-year anniversary. I don't remember what anniversary it was, but they did a whole, you know, tribute to it, and they were showing some of the clips. And I remember looking over at my daughter, and she is horrified, and she is bawling, and I'm like, what is wrong? Because I thought something happened to her, and she just had never seen those images before.
Right.
Because again, she was one when it happened, and then by the time she was older, all of that had died down. Like, we just weren't showing those things anymore. And she had heard of 9/11. She knew about it conceptually,
but
like there was this thing that happened,
but she hadn't been presented with the people jumping out of buildings,
all of
the firefighters going up into a tower that was collapsing, and that kind of thing.
And I remember we left the church. You know, she was hysterical, and I was just like, I never realized how much of an impact those images could have. And then it made me think, you know, gosh, because it was on repeat, it was on a loop for I don't know how long, a very long time, mm-hmm. that those were the only images you saw. If you turned on the TV, you saw some footage of something happening from 9/11. And it does make you kind of wonder, like, how that impacted us. Like, mm-hmm. it impacted your son, right? Yeah. You know, like, I mean, just...
Yeah, we switched over to Disney Channel and Nickelodeon at that point, and that was what we were watching. Although it's funny because our boss had, I won't say teased us, but was like, what, you're not watching the news? And we're like, you know... Every single piece of our show prep has all this information in there. So, yeah, we're shielding our kids.
Yeah.
But should you shield your kids? I mean, that was the question he had asked. You know, why would you shield your kids? Don't you want them to understand what's going on? And he had more of a vested interest because his family was New York-based.
Okay.
So he remembered a special occasion taking his grandmother to Windows on the World for her 60th birthday.
Right.
And now that was rubble, you know, and he was really horrified by what had happened. Even though he was programming station in the Midwest, it was still something that resonated very much with him. And so he really felt we should focus on that a lot, which I did understand. But on the other hand, there's the why do you want to scare everybody mentality that you have to worry about as well.
I mean, well, in today's day and age with social media and 24-hour news, it's hard not to be exposed to it. I mean, just think of some of the tragedies that have happened. You know, you have the war in Ukraine, you have the war with Israel and Gaza, you have even January 6th, you have just, you know, there have been, that's just this year, a couple years. It's like not, it's just, and it just never seems to stop. And I do think that you want to shield the kids from some of it. I don't know. It's like the whole age appropriateness thing, right? Like maybe they need to know that something's happening, but maybe they don't need to know all of the details about what's happening. Because I do think that everything is recorded, you know, and they don't need
and
to
see. And
we
get obsessive about it.
Yeah.
And we really shouldn't, for the sake of our kids, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. Because then, of course, though, if you're not bringing attention to it and you're not discussing it, then things don't necessarily always change, right?
Right.
So, you know, so it's that fine line. But I definitely feel like our kids, this, you know, generation, they are highly impacted by it because they see so much unfiltered hate.
Yeah.
You know, and they see all of that. And I don't know, you know, how you
guide them away from it or help them interpret it, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we did sit down with the kids after the first grade teacher had a conversation with us and said, you know, you understand that what you saw isn't what should be happening, that this is evil and this is good. The people racing in there to help, they're good. That's evil. And I mean, they got it. They understood that concept. But I think it was a good thing for us to reiterate that and say that's not acceptable behavior. This is, but it's not preferable behavior because you don't want people to have to run into buildings to save other people because somebody did something stupid, ignorant, and horrifying.
Yeah.
You know,
it's definitely difficult. I mean, so, and even just like with, you know, what's happening right now with a lot of the protests and like even that, like how do you talk to your kids about what they're allowed to, not allowed, but what they, how they want to express themselves and their opinion about something.
Yeah.
But then also within the confines of what's good for society and all of that. And, you know, it's definitely, I think kids nowadays, they have a harder terrain to manage through. Yeah. It is a lot more difficult just because of social media and the way that news is portrayed. You just can't get away from it. It doesn't matter what, you know.
It's omnipotent.
Yeah. It's just always there. It's always present.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always negative.
Yeah. I wonder how we can turn that around so it doesn't have to be negative, that you can focus on the positive. I mean, I've always thought that it would be kind of cool if we had like a positive news channel or something like that, where you could find out what people are doing to help other people. But then again, help other people from what?
Yeah,
there's always that. So then you do wind up in some way reflecting some of the negative in there.
Well, I know during COVID, I can't think of his name right now. My brain's not working. But, you know, The Office, he was
Jim. Steve Carell?
Steve, the other guy. Nagynski?
Yeah, Krasinski.
Yeah. So he did a positive newscast during COVID.
Yes, he did.
I think maybe it was once a week, maybe it was once a day. I can't remember.
Yeah.
That was so long ago. That was a world ago. But I remember because I did. I listened. I watched that. I watched that podcast, newscast, you know, whatever. And it was nice. It was nice to hear about something that was positive.
And he's got kids. So that probably, you know, inspired him to a certain extent.
I really had to search for it. I can tell you that, I mean, just for myself, like I watch a lot, I listen to a lot of NPR when I drive. I think for me personally, it comes up with a lot of really good speech topics because that's what I teach.
Yeah.
And so I'm always like, oh, have you heard this? You know that? And so I can always come up with stuff. But during the election years, at least in the last few, I cannot listen to that negativity all day.
Yeah.
Especially my drive in the morning. I need to be in a good headspace to be around kids and holding their fresh and energetic minds and all of that. And so I just can't listen to all that negativity. So a lot of times I listen to music instead because I'm just like, I can't have that negativity dump all the time.
Yeah.
So I do think that it's important to talk to kids about that. We all get overwhelmed by the amount of heaviness that we can be exposed to.
So let's not get weighted down. Let's figure out a way of lightening the load.
Finding something to escape from, but not necessarily escape from addressing the problems, right?
Right.
So it's about finding that balance where we can step back to maintain our own mental health, which I do think we talk about mental health so much more than like when I was a kid or my parents were kids.
Yeah.
And so I do think that kids nowadays, they realize that, hey, I'm weighed down by this information. And I think they realize that now. So I think that's good on one hand.
Yeah.
You know, that they recognize, you know, that they're feeling something based on what they're consuming in terms of the media.
Yes. Yes. And hopefully that'll in turn prompt media to find something that is a little bit healthier and give them a little healthier diet when it comes to getting that balance between what should be done and why it should be done and what people are doing to improve everybody's circumstances.
It would be nice if there was a 24-hour news channel that was all positive that you could just click to it anytime. I do follow a few people, you know, online, and they all have like one does like good news on Thursdays, and a couple of them do them every day on the radio for a couple minutes, and I always listen to those. But it's like at some point it would be like, you know, like it'd be nice to be able to just like tune
have a
in
good news network.
You could just turn on to that channel. You know, I know it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't sell, because what do they say? If it bleeds, it leads, right?
So. But they're starting. It was funny because I came across in LinkedIn one of the people I follow who does newsletters and things like that had posted a video of an interview with Walter Cronkite, and he was gently in Walter Cronkite form criticizing people that went with the "if it bleeds, it leads" and why are we? He's like, I understand that you need to attract attention, but using that as a means to do it is the wrong way to go, was the way he put it. And I think he said it very well. But anyway, I'm going to be using that in one of my classes to, you know, maybe inspire the next generation of broadcasters to think about what they're putting up there and out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, I agree. Because it's definitely, I think it is more impactful than we know.
Yeah.
And that we think about. We probably do need to start thinking about what we put out there, whether we're talking about being a patriot to our country, or whether we're just talking about being a good steward of the land, or we're talking about being an informed citizen of the world. I think that there's a lot of negative that goes in with all of that.
Yeah. And as parents, you want your kids to be good stewards and to be positive people and to look for the good in people. And it's hard to do that if everything they're seeing is negative.
Yeah.
So I guess you have to kind of corral that a little bit, what they're exposed to. But do you do that by saying you can only watch these channels? Do you do that by saying you can only read this information because it's safe?
I don't know, because I mean, certainly in the old days when when there was only one TV in the house and there's only a set number of channels, you knew
what your kids were watching
because that's what was on the channel. Now, like, you'd have no idea. There are so many outlets, right? So many apps, so yep. many, you know, streams, so many, like you have no idea what
media is ubiquitous.
Yeah. What they're getting and what that information is. So to have a conversation, I actually remember reading about something where, you know, back in the day when you would make pop culture references, it worked really well because you knew that everybody had seen that movie
right.
or watched that show.
Right.
But now it becomes very difficult to make that connection because they're just, there isn't that universal, I wouldn't say universal, but, you know, nationwide, you know,
right.
thing where we all have watched the same, you know, thing. We've all seen the same thing. Yeah. We all watched the same sporting event. That just doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Because of our access to
so much.
Yeah, to so yeah. much. Yeah. So I think it would definitely now, you know, those raising younger kids really have to have lots of conversations about, well, what are you watching? What are mm-hmm. you learning about? Where are you hearing that?
Yeah.
You know, and you can't just assume that they're watching or hearing the same stuff you are.
No, nope, you really can't make that assumption. But the folks that are putting out content will tell you, well, there are parental controls and all this. And it's like, they only work so well.
Yeah.
And some of the things that you think are okay for the kids to watch may turn into something that you're like, oh, might make you as a parent feel a little squishy inside. Like,
yeah.
that's not the message I really want my kid to have.
Well, even you just know. Like with my experience with Ivy and 9/11, I just assumed she had seen those pictures
yeah.
and seen those videos. I don't know. I just assumed she had, and she never had, or maybe she wasn't old enough to make that connection that those are people that were jumping. Like, you know, it just, mm-hmm. and she just was so impacted by that. And I just was like, wow, like it really left a mark on me about, you know, just like, I can really see why it is hard to move past some of the times when people feel that they've been wronged or they've had something really bad happen to them
yeah.
because it just leaves that mark.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that you really can't erase or remove.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, hopefully our kids, you know, will have a better handle on it than we are, because I mean, it's still for us, it's fledgling. All of this new media is fledgling. For them, it's just
life.
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully they'll figure out how to balance it a little bit better with their kids. You know, not to say that we didn't do it with ours, but it was new. So we didn't know. I mean, there are a lot of things that our kids are exposed to that we don't know about until after the
right.
fact.
I think they will, because like I mentioned earlier, I think that they have a very good grasp on mental health and about when things don't feel right and how yeah. to say and how to talk about that. And I really have high hopes for the next generation,
yeah.
You know, for our kids, and for them to be able to handle things in just hopefully a better way, but maybe just a more informed way than we were able to.
Yeah. Oh, of course, then there are those that are more patriotic that'll say, well, if you don't expose them to that, they, you know, we'll lose people enlisting in the military. And I mean, that has been a problem since we've gotten rid of the draft over the years. Thank God we did. But it still makes you wonder if people will respect those in the armed forces more or less because of what they're exposed to in media and social media.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
Something to chew on as we head into Memorial Day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She's Sherry Wallis. I'm Diana Kelly. This is Go Tell Mom. Thanks for sharing this episode of Go Tell Mom with us, Diana Kelly and Sherry Wallis. We focus on the kind of things you might share with your mom or tell about your mom, or maybe not. If you have something you'd like to share or comment on, please click on our comment section. See you next time with Go Tell Mom.